morning.
Blog Talk Radio.
There we go.
This is All About Wine, the talk show dedicated to the wine industry since 2009, featuring winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron.
Basically, what we're doing this program is just trying to educate people and trying to make wine less confusing and more friendly.
From coast to coast and around the world.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that.
Post your questions and comments during the live show on our Facebook page at www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. Again, that's www.facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr. And now, All About Wine is on. Here's Ron.
Good crowd tonight. Good crowd. All right. Thank you. Thank you.
Very cool. Welcome to the show. 7-something p.m. 7 still? 7:01?
7:01. Yeah. And it's on May the 11th, 2023. So if you listen to us live, thank you. If you listen to us on archives, thank you. And we are no guests tonight. We are going to have a guest next week. And so I'll get you the information on that, Mike, so you can get it posted. And this is something I was going to talk to you about, Mike, before we got on the air. But since we're on the air, I can still talk to you about it, I suppose. I don't think it's something that I have to do off the air. I got a email for a guest from a Nick Cataldi. And he is saying that he can get us a guest with Michelle Ross on the show. But Michelle Ross is Somstation. Didn't we do Somstation with another?
Yeah.
Danielle Deliberti?
That sounds familiar. Yeah.
Yeah, I thought so too. And so we can get that's something you can, if you don't mind.
We had Danielle from the CEO of Somstation on December 22nd last year.
Okay, yeah, I thought maybe we did, because he mentioned, you know, I would be more than happy to put you in contact with the CEO. And then he mentioned her name, and I thought, wait a minute, we did something with them. So, yeah. I guess we can have Michelle on the show. Tell her background and everything she's doing and her perspective of Somstation and see what she has to say about it. So, I just wanted to confirm that we had talked to someone from there. So when I contact Nick, I can let him know. But yeah, okay, very good. I'll try to get her on sometime soon, then have her tell us her story, I guess, and what she's how she got into it and all that. So that will should be interesting there too. Very good. I just got stuff tonight to pass on, just information, all that, things that I thought that you all might find interesting. You as our listeners out there. And so unless we don't have anything else, I guess we'll jump right into it tonight, which is unusual because we usually don't get into the show this early in forever. So, all right, here we go. Vietnamese wines. I was talking to Mike about that a little bit before the show. The Vietnamese wines. I get different things in my email on wines. Different things pop up all the time. I subscribe to a lot of different wine-related news stories and stuff. And I got one that popped up that was about Vietnamese wines and what was going on there and how they're catching hold in the Middle East and how they're exporting. I don't know. I think the number was like 65% of their wines. And it was, I just glanced at the article thinking, okay, this would be something interesting to talk about because Vietnam is an area that everybody's heard of, because of the long drawn out war there, and a lot of people have been there, and it's a new tourist attraction now. Vietnam is really bringing in a lot of people as tourists, so it's becoming a destination for a lot of people. People said that they're really doing something about wine, so I decided to look up Vietnamese wines, and why? I tell you, they are doing a lot with wines. It is really surprising. And it's a lot of women are doing the wines there, too. It's not just men that are taking over and doing it, but surprisingly, the women have done a lot in the different areas. First, the regions of Vietnamese grape growing. The winemakers from Australia and different international areas have been to Vietnam and have brought in grapes. It's a little hot to grow grapes in Vietnam. It gets to be very, very hot and humid. And let's see, where I'm going to look at something here I saw earlier. I'm sorry, I'm not really organized on this because I wasn't sure I was going to even mention this, but where am I? Here we go. Okay. Vietnamese wine was first cultivated and brought into the country by the French, which, if you know anything about history, the French was over in Vietnam for a number of years. And that's when the United States went over there and the French left. The region is usually too hot for Vitis vinifera. This is the one that we're so used to in our wines. But in the late 20th century, after the French basically failed to do anything with grapes there because of the heat, they pulled out their grape things. But in 1995, Australia decided to jump back in, and they started to plant and reintroduce Cabernet Sauvignon and Chardonnay. And the thing is, they had to go in and clear out a lot of areas to start with because, landmines were still left over from the Vietnam War. And they had to clean out a lot of areas. And once they got the areas clean, they went in and planted Cabernet Sauvignon and Chardonnay. Vietnam is located really in a tropical climate. It's high humidity in the rainy seasons throughout the summer, the monsoons, and it's not conducive to wine grapes and trying to grow wine grapes. The French planted their vineyards in the highlands, and so this was around Hanoi, which is in northern Vietnam. And modern viticulture areas have produced success in those areas by doing some aggressive pruning and special type of trellising for the grapes and everything. And it has helped prevent the grapes from getting powdery mildew and all sorts of problems with a lot of rain. And it is working. In 2005, the main grape varieties planted in Vietnam are the Cardinal and the Chamborson. I don't know what the Cardinal is. Let's click on this and see what the Cardinal is. Why don't we do that? The grape is a cross of the Coin de Weingarten and Ribbler table grape. There you go. According to latest research, the grape is used as a typical table grape for eating and making raisins. In Thailand and Vietnam, it's widely used in wine production. And it is the main parent of the Blanc de Bois subtropical wine grape. There you go. All right. Cultivation of the variety was introduced in the Philippines in the 70s and is grown there now. So, interesting. The Cardinal. Never heard of the Cardinal. So, main grapes are those two, the Cardinal and the Chamborson, but there's an abundance of fruit there. So the Australian winemakers were working on introducing more international grape varieties in the region, as well as experimenting with sparkling wines. And it's working somewhat. Many new vineyard sites are being planted in areas that have been mostly demined. And so that's the areas that they're finding that is good for grapevines now. After the demined area, they're putting in grapevines. But there's a lot of fruit wines coming out of Vietnam. And it's growing. Oh, crap. I clicked a button there that wiped off my screen. And here we go. Okay. One of the questions on Google search is there good wine in Vietnam? And the answer is, even though the country has warm and humid weather, the viticulture thrives in different regions, especially with grapes, Cardinal, and Chamborson. Taste excellent wines in the Vietnamese wineries, finding outstanding accommodations, and enjoy amazing vineyards and cellar tours. So, yes, there are some good wines coming out of Vietnam. And that's what I have found in the articles I read. There are some very good wines coming out of Vietnam. So, they are exporting a lot. Now, I don't know if any of that's being exported to the United States. I hope so, because I'd really like to find some Vietnam. Vietnamese wines here. I think that would be interesting to see what they are, even if they are some of those brands that we normally wouldn't expect to find in wines. So, let's see. Here's an interesting question. How much does a bottle of wine cost in Vietnam? And it says mid-range bottles will set you back less than $10. Well, which is sort of scary if it's only that cheap. But after they ship it across over here, who knows how much it'll cost. So, vineyards of southern Vietnam. We were talking about the vineyards around Hanoi, which is in northern Vietnam. And this is talking about another one here. Birthplace of Vietnamese wine, Dalat, D-A-L-A-T. The best ones can be found in Dalat. Dalat is a mountain town in the south central highland of Vietnam, with a milder climate. And when the French came with wineries, though not well advertised or well known, these wineries are still in business today and can be found and can find their bottles in stores around the city, and you can visit the wineries yourself in Dalat. One of the oldest and biggest wineries of the region is the Dalat Becco, found by the French in 1974, just right before the the Vietnamese War ended. The winery grows its own organic grapes and produces various types of red and white wines. So, interesting, interesting. Didn't know about Vietnamese wines being so popular. If you see any, if you've tasted any, if you've had any, if you know where you can buy any, email me. Let me know. I would really, really be interested in knowing about Vietnamese wines. I seriously doubt I'm going to find any around because I've never seen any in all the times I perused the wine shops and stuff. But who knows? There may be some hidden in the corners of some of these places that I'm not aware of. Okay. Now, some other information for you here, some of the little things. The first one is, I thought was interesting, ChatGPT. ChatGPT is, it's artificial intelligence that interfaces with ChatGPT. And it says that older the people are, the less they know about this, and the younger they are, the more they can navigate right through all this ChatGPT. Excuse me. But ChatGPT, generally loved by the people, by the kind of people who loathe producing things via committee, ChatGPT, which, as Decanter's own critic Matt Wallace pointed out on social media recently, sounds like a cat I've farted when said in French, uses vast amounts of already available data across the internet to find the best response to your question. And that's what ChatGPT is. A lot of students use it to write reports. Thus, AI suggestions are in line of best fit across a host of data points. Okay. Now, this is what winery in Languedoc-based Abert and Matthaus, the end cuvee, produced across only 600 bottles, and is the first wine that is done with artificial intelligence. And it goes on, the platform suggested a 60% Grenache and 40% Syrah blend, which it said generally makes it possible to obtain a fruity and balanced wine, but you can reverse the proportions to obtain a more tannic profile. That was quoted from the chat, artificial intelligence. The interface also suggested a burgundy-shaped bottle, casing the wine, it said, and it also ignored the suggested, and the winery also ignored the suggested retail price from the artificial intelligence of selling between 50 and 100 euro. Instead, they opted for a more entry-level 20 euro. And let's see, no reports or anything that says what it actually tastes like, because like I said, they made 600 bottles of it, so it is, no reports on it. So there you go. It's the first artificial intelligence ChatGPT produced and corroborated bottle of wine. I don't think we'll see it over here because only 600 bottles that won't make it across the pond. So that'll pretty much take care of that. Okay. Let me get out of that and go to that. Okay. Washington wine industry has a new problem. Washington State has a new problem. It is beetles. And that is, well, as among so many problems we have in the wine industry, if you raise grapes for a living and you've never met Popolia Japonica, and that is the name of Popolia Japonica, says, consider yourself lucky that as this is not the kind of girl you want to take home to mom or your grapevines. Is the scientifically named scarab beetle. And it's an invasive species that feeds on foliage, buds, flowers, fruits, and over 300 plants with grapevines at the top of the preferred menu. They will skeletonize the leaves and some grape varieties or eat completely through the leaves of others. So it just defoliates the plant. They've made a home throughout American viticulture for over a century since they arrived from Japan in 1916. But the latest infestation is causing concern in Washington, where the State Department of Agriculture has identified Yakima and Benton counties as hotspots. Investigators detected and destroyed some 23,000 of the beetles there last year, and they have major concerns that it's going to be much, much more this year. And Japanese beetles are active flyers capable of covering up to 5 miles with a little tailwind. And the area is on high alert. Incredibly destructive is the way that they're described, adding the discovery of even one should bring about a high alert. They are that destructive. The brilliant colored pest can cause significant damage to grapevines during the peak adult activity period of July through September. And let's see, the 2,000 of some 3,000 Grandview area properties were sprayed with insecticide in 2022, the first year of the spraying program. Properties sprayed last year with the low risk insecticide need another application in 2023 to promote the eradication. So, another bug we have to worry about, another non-native bug that needs to be worried about here in the United States. And this one is the, the Popolia Japonica, or the common name was Japanese beetle. Yeah, there you go. That was pretty easy to remember. So Japanese beetle, scarab, multicolored, sort of a pretty bug, but still very destructive to plants. Let's go to this. Oh, why is this? Okay, there we go. All right. Two different things for you here. Wine industry. Oh, I thought this was funny. Why are industry professionals rethinking the language of wine? Well, I won't go into this whole article here, but it in a nutshell, I read it, and I shook my head a lot while I was reading it. They say that the language of wine has been around for years, and it has been one that we continue to teach in classes. We continue to talk about it. I've mentioned it many times. I mean, it's just something that's out there and something that we do because it's pretty much ingrained in the culture of wine drinking. And this group of sommeliers are saying, well, why don't we change this? Why don't we make it simpler? Huh? I thought, make it simpler from what? It's pretty simple now. aroma. How can we make a smell? Okay, we can change aroma to smell. And bouquet would be pretty smell. I don't know. I think it's a little silly that they're talking about doing a simpler, friendlier wine languages. It just seems, I don't know. But they're talking about the aroma wheel. Well, yeah, the aroma wheel is around for a long time, and the aroma wheel has been quite overused, but there are different words that are not on the aroma wheel, so it can be expanded. There's nothing wrong with that. Okay, expand the aroma wheel and find more aromas to stick in there, if you will. But I think if you start getting too many aromas in there, you're going to get to the point where it's just saturated with one, and a lot of them are going to seem almost identical to the other. As for the novice, it already is. So just, you know, back off from the aroma wheel. And then then we've got other descriptors that, you know, people are saying we don't need to use these, and when these are getting a little out of hand. I think that if you keep it simple, it's not out of hand. It pretty much describes everything. I think when you start getting sommeliers like these people who are saying that we need to take a different approach, when you start getting the sommeliers doing that, when you start getting these people who go crazy on it and sniff a wine and say, I smelled a little bit of burnt leather from the couch when you dropped a cigar on it at 7 o'clock at night. You know, and stuff like that. I mean, it just, you're going, you know, just give a simple description. But I think some of the sommeliers get a little carried away with their description. If you ever heard them, you can understand what I'm saying. And a lot of times you're going, wow, I don't, you know, what? I don't get that at all. And it just confuses people. But if you keep it simple and don't try to show that you're detecting a whole bunch of subtle things in there, then that's probably a lot easier to distinguish the whole thing. So, I don't know. The language is a little bit crazy, and language is a little bit overall, I think it's okay, though. You know, when they go on about this stuff, it needs to be changed. No, it doesn't. You know, it just quit trying to make it so much more than what it really is, and we'll be fine. Okay, the next one we got here is what the heck? There you go. Batonnage. You all know what that is. Most people don't. It's a French word. And batonnage is simply entails stirring up the dead yeast cells with a stick or a baton. Sticking it down into the barrel and stirring up all the stuff at the bottom. Let me give you a little read here on the techniques and stuff of batonnage. This is like many traditional French practices designed to make life more delicious. Batonnage can result in transcendence under the right conditions. Okay. The lees in a wine barrel are made up of dead yeast cells, grape stems, and skin tidbits. These are skins from the grapes. The cell membranes also are included in the grape pulp and micromolecules and other tiny grape goodies. They all settle to the bottom of the fermentation vessel. That's when you talk about racking off the top. You're taking the wine off of the top of that, not picking up that stuff. In a technique that dates back to the ancient Roman times, newly fermented wine is often left on the lees in the tank. And all that stuff at the bottom is called the lees, L-E-E-S. So it's left on the lees in the tank or barrel or vat or whatever you're using. Contact adds complexity, improves texture and mouthfeel, and helps build structure in your wine. Okay, pretty simple. Stirring the lees back into the wine in the vessel, generally but not always on oak barrels, is known as the art of batonnage, B-A-T-O-N-N-A-G-E. Generally accomplished with a stick, there are also racking systems that accomplish the same goal without using a stick. Batonnage, in addition to extracting additional layers of flavor, aroma, texture, and structure, also reduces the risk of hydrogen sulfide forming. Okay, and the reason for that, left on their own dead yeasty devices, lees can sometimes settle into a solid mass that imbues an entire batch of wine with the distinct odor of rotting eggs. Okay, so that's a problem if you just let it sit there too long without paying attention to it. So more flavor and structure, fewer scents of decaying ovum, win-win. But not always. As temperatures rise in many winemaking regions and wine taste trends toward leaner, fresher flavors, some winemakers are sidelining the longtime partner tonnage in their fight with climate change, while others embrace it ever more enthusiastically. So, there you go. That's batonnage. And it's, you can taste if a wine, well, yeah, a lot of times. You can taste a wine that has been stirred, that has been mixed up with that, because it gives it a little, I think, a little creamier flavor. So it's, you know, next time it says left on the lees or something like that, and they do, they brag about that, and a lot of wineries will put that on their label, left on the lees, and if that's there, then look for the creaminess in the wine. So, okay, so that, I wanted to tell you about batonnage. And let's see. And this one. Oh, there we go. Okay, this one I can. Washington State has tried to introduce a bill in the Senate, and the Washington wine industry helped stop it. The bill wanted to lower the DUI to 0.05% from the 0.08. Now, that doesn't sound like much, but it is. It makes a big difference. The only state right now that's using 0.05 is Utah. And that's where about a third, two-thirds of the population is Mormon. And so they got a bunch of other weird rules that we've already talked about in past episodes in Utah. But 0.05, the bill that was introduced in Washington State was stopped before it got to the governor. And the governor said he was going to sign it into a law if it came to his desk. And it's the passage of that type of bill would have would have changed drinking habits in whatever state it goes into. And I'm not exaggerating. 0.05 is basically one drink. And it is impossible to judge how much of people have. This is something the restaurants were complaining about. They're saying that when someone walks into the restaurant, you can't tell if they've had one drink or not. They sit down and they say, give me a drink. And you pour them a drink, and there's their second one, and that 0.05 has been reached. And so what do? You say, okay, you can't drink anymore because you reached a 0.05, and they don't show any signs of it or anything, but their blood alcohol content is going to be at 0.05. And the sad thing is, and this is something that when I had the winery, this it was something that I heard that the federal government was going to look at doing a 0.05 blood alcohol content as opposed to 0.08. And I'd signed petitions and all sorts of stuff along with other wineries trying to stop this because one thing, 0.05 is so low that one drink, especially women, and this is nothing against women drinking, but alcohol gets to them faster than men. And one drink on ladies that came into the winery would have hit that 0.05. Two for men would have hit that 0.05 in a short period of time. A good example would be going to a restaurant, a couple going to a restaurant, ordering a bottle of wine, and they would have to have one drink each of that bottle of wine and take it home. And places don't allow that. Florida does, yay. But places don't allow that. And so it just opened up so many horrible possibilities that I don't think they considered. And so they did stop it. They did drop it on a federal level. And it still pops up every once in a while up on the state level, hence Washington, someone introducing it there too. It's horrible that people drink and drive. And it's horrible that people, I had a very good friend of mine when I was in eighth grade, a very good friend of mine lost his sister to a drunk driver. I mean, I was first introduced to it back then. And I've been aware of it ever since. There's been other incidences, but you know, it's horrible. But still, though, the 0.05 is right at that edge that is just too low. And is it really going to stop the people who are going to drink and drive and not care about it anyway? I mean, no, it's not. So I'll get off my soapbox. I always tend to get on a soapbox every night or every week about something that I see, and this is one of those there where trying to get that fine or that alcohol level down for people. I mean, you know, I don't know. I don't have a solution right now. I wasn't thinking about it, but I know the solution is not lowering the alcohol content in your bloodstream to 0.05 from 0.08. So, okay, let me get out of that. And let me go to... This one I thought was interesting. We just talked last week about how the millennials are not drinking and the boomers are dying out and wine is losing its appeal and it is not being bought as often and all sorts of things like that. Well, this article And this is out of the drinks business. It says, everyone bemoans the lack of interest in wine among millennials and Gen Z. But wine producers and online retailers in the U.S. are finding that the younger generation love a tailored subscription and will outspend boomers and Gen X sufficiently, or significantly, it says, if the offer is right. So there you go. It's the situation finds that the 60-plus age group is the only growth segment in the wine market. But the Gen Z and millennials are spending, and they are spending money on wine, but it is if it's sold in a particular way. They're not just going to the grocery store and spending money on wine and screwing up the averages. So young consumers welcome getting everything from sandwiches to beauty products delivered to them on a subscription basis. And it says that almost half of Gen Z, 46%, and millennials, 49%, were interested in subscriptions compared to about a third of the overall public. So almost half of Gen Z's 48% and millennials at 44% expressed interest in products linked to online celebrities and curators or influencers. The only thing that's better than a subscription for them is one that suits their particular goals and desires, and especially if it's touted on social media, where Gen Z spends on average more than 4 hours scrolling, clicking, and buying every day. So, it's, you know, the thing with Gen Z and millennials are not buying wine. So they are. It's just through a different type of approach. They're not going down to the store. They belong to clubs. They belong to subscription groups that they get it shipped to them all the time. And not unlike my grandson and his wife, they also go to people's house and have wine tastings that they then can get wine right through them because the people have extra wine, they buy it. And so there's all sorts of different approaches to wine. So the reports of the wine industry dying because the millennials and the Gen Zs are not buying is greatly exaggerated. And it is not something that it needs to be panicked. It's just a different approach that they're taking to wine buying. And that different approach is working for them, and obviously it's going to work for the wine industry. I can't see why not. Okay, so let's go back to this next one here. Virginia Tech researchers are employing dogs to sniff out the infamous spotted lanternfly. We've talked about this spotted lanternfly for a long time, for 3 or 4 years. I have to say that All About Wine was one of the first ones who ever mentioned this. It was something I talked about before you started to see it in all the wine journals and everything, because it is bad, and it is in, started in Pennsylvania, now it's down to Virginia and around. But Virginia Tech researchers are training dogs to detect the spotted lanternfly eggs. And they're training them, which is just the article says, a simple reward system. You smell out the egg and I'll give you some food. And dogs like that. Obviously they like that. And it's working. They're taking them out to the vineyard and showing them around the vineyard. The dogs are sniffing and finding spotted lanternfly eggs, and then they're rewarded with treats. And so it's they're finding that only dogs trained. You can't just take a dog out there and expect him to find it. It's not going to happen. He said it's a determinant of the spotted lanternfly. Let's see here. Oh, he said that the guy who's training the dog said he first had a first time he recalls flying the drone when the fly was first detected at the research center about 2 years ago, and he said there were thousands of them, and so he partnered with the university's canine olfaction research and education laboratory and got a dog out there, and they're training dogs now to be able to sniff out and find the eggs of the spotted lanternfly. Good for them. You know, the more and more ways we can stop that bug, the better it is. It is really starting to travel around the world. I haven't seen the latest map of the spotted lanternfly. But from what I understand, it has advanced tremendously around the country. I'll have to see if I can't find a map somewhere, but it really has taken over. Peru has found 6 new grape varieties, wine grape varieties, by researchers in the desert province of Caravelli in southern Peru. The new 6 varieties are called Jane, J-A-E-N, Cantrilla, Cinza, and it's also locally known as Malata, Negro de Caravelli, Loca, and Moscatel Negro Rubio. And these grapevines are unregistered yet. They are Vitis vinifera grapes. And they are, said 4 newly identified mutations of the Negro Caravelli variety have been deemed warrant further research. And they said it is possibilities. There's, I think there are, here we go. At least 2 of the varieties, the white Jeanne and the red Cantrilla, are natural crossings of the Negro Corolla and the local variant of Muscatel de Alexandria. So they said they are worthy of propagation for wine production. So 6 new wine grapes discovered. It's always amazing to me how they can discover new things in our world with so much technology we have and everything else and everything that's going on. And here they find 6 new wine grapes in an area of Peru that you would think that it would be noticed, and I don't know. It just fascinates me. It really does that they would do that. But new wine grapes in Peru, they have come out. We'll see if we hear any new information on them coming up in the future. They do all pass it on to you. If you are in the market and you are seriously considering buying a wine, and here's a big winery on the market in Australia. All right. It is Selina Estate in the Riverland, one of Australia's biggest wineries. And it's time, it says, quote, it's time to ease back a bit and slow things down a bit, says the manager director, Bob Perchita, 64. Selina Estate, established in 1998, produces about 10,000 tons of wine each year. about 70% of which have been exported. So there's a market there for it. Included in the sale are 191.5 hectares of vineyards, a lot. Half our vineyards are certified organic. We probably got one of the largest, if not the largest, holdings of organic Syrah and Cabernet, said Bob. Other assets include a cellar door, restaurant, bottling line, a distillery, and a residence. The winery is named after Bob and Sylvia Francetto's daughter, Selena. The property is being sold through Collier's Agribusiness. And that's it. No price, no anything. You are seriously interested, you can get a hold of them, and I'm sure that they will more than be happy to send you the price. Pretty modern looking place, too. They have a picture. There's 18 big tanks outside, and 12 smaller tanks outside also, and I can't tell, they don't show anything inside or any more stuff, but there you go, get a hold of them. Australia, Collier's Agribusiness. Probably go to collier'sagribusiness.au. I guess that's the code for Australia, and they'll show you more through there. But a big winery for sale. Okay, this is done. And let's go to this. And let's go to, that's what I want. This is what I want. And oh, here we go. Archaeologists have uncovered a Roman winery. And it also shows paintings on the wall of it, too. And it says, ancient winery has been discovered in the ruins of the Villa di Quintilli. They were searching for a chariot arena that was built beneath it, and they discovered the winery. The winery was discovered by chance. It says, new archaeologists in Rome discover an opulent winery almost 2,000 years old, which may have been used to entertain imperial guests. And it says it's situated just beyond the perimeters of ancient Rome. Covered nearly 24 hectares of land and surrounded a landscape of orchards, agriculture, and other lavish villas. So it's thought that the flow would then have channeled into vast storage jars set in the ground for fermentation to take place, which was a standard practice at the time. Oh, all right. Big winery that was found 2,000 years ago. That's always amazing. Always amazing when you see stuff that like that. That's interesting. And let's see. New type of wine. New type of wine is emerging in the San Francisco Bay Area. No one knows what to call it, but because it is a blend of fruit wine and grape wine. And it sounds like, don't do this to me. I am a subscriber. San Francisco Chronicle here. I'm a subscriber, and it's booting me out until I put back in. Hang on. Okay, there we go. Brings it up. There we go. All right. It is a fruit wine, and it is blended with Sauvignon Blanc. It's sold in San Francisco area. They said people are getting tired of the same old, and they're looking for other things. And they said it's really starting to sell quite well. They don't have a name for it yet because it is quite new, and they're really concerned about how they're going to get certification because it is not wine, and it's not, well, fruit wine is fruit wine, so it should be able to get certification on that. But we'll see. New wine in the San Francisco area of fruit wines. And let's go back to this one here. And, oh, yeah. This is, if you are going to be in California anytime around the, what date? June the 1st to the 4th, Livermore Valley, California. Livermore is just east and a little south of San Francisco, just almost due east of San Jose. Great valley. There's a lot of stuff there, too. A lot of wineries around Livermore Valley and everything. But they're going to have the, I think, first annual, is this? Yeah. First annual, what they're calling Cab Franc Arpalooza. The Cab Franc Arpalooza. It's going to take place June the 1st to the 4th in Livermore Valley. It's going to be 4 days. 40 wineries will celebrate all things Cabernet Franc with events and tastings, with the grand tasting on Sunday the 4th. Tickets are available at campfrancpalooza.com. Camp Franc Arpalooza, Arpalooza, C-A-B-F-R-A-N-C-A-P-A-L-O-O-Z-A. And they have all sorts of events. Celebration of Livermore Valley Cabernet Franc is on Thursday the 1st with a big event at the Posada Restaurant. And Friday, Livermore Valley versus Lower Valley, a blind tasting that's going on. Six wines from two regions. Saturday, exploration into Cab Franc will offer intimate tasting experience with five unique regions, Livermore Valley, Napa Valley, Oregon, Virginia, and Bordeaux. And then Sunday, the grand tasting will be hosted outdoors at the Stephen Kent Winery in Livermore and will feature 25 wineries and 18 unique wine regions that produce world-class Cab Franc. That sounds fantastic. I love Cabernet Franc. I really do. I mean, I would rather get a Cabernet Franc than a Cabernet Sauvignon any day. Dates, June 1st to the 4th. Location, Livermore Valley. Or Livermore, California. They don't call it Valley anymore, I guess. Ticket prices start at $79. And can be purchased at cabfrancapalooza.com. So, there you go. We'll end on that tonight. That's a great event. Might have to take the All About Wine private jet out there for that. That would be a good use for it. We try to cut back on using the All About Wine private jet because of global warming and all that stuff. We try to do our part, but try to be discreet when we use it. And maybe something like this is falls into that discrete category.
Yeah.
Exactly. Well, we are, let me look at the right clock here because I got three different times on my screen. Almost 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
Yeah. The other one is 2 minutes and 15 seconds behind again. I don't know. We'll get that figured out sometimes. It's video, all kinds of stuff going. But anyway, and remember I told you before the show, you said something, asked me if we had rain, and the fact that you mentioned it probably jinxed us. Well, I had to put the storm warning bulletin on the little ticker thing. Then all of a sudden, I go, what in the world? So I looked at the radar, and I go, oh, we're getting hit from the north. And luckily, it died down. It got overhead, but it was – there's some – orange and reds that were heading this way, and it just all of a sudden it hits, you know, the northern of us, and it just kind of died out before it hit. So, but I thought, you got to be kidding me.
That's amazing how that storms die out here in Florida. I've never been anywhere where you have a storm that's heading at you, and you're going, hit the deck, and then you look up and it's gone.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, they're not consistent. It's kind of like, hey, we're moving in, and then they go, nah, we'll just go around.
No,
or we'll just stop.
We'll just stop. Yeah, I know, that's funny. It's been good here, but we look to the east, and it's some nasty big clouds heading this way from the east. So we'll probably get some pretty soon.
Yeah, and then I had someone show me some hail damage they had, not today, but it was within the last week or so, I think it was.
Really?
And they had two hailstones next to a tape measure, and it was about 2 inches across, I think.
Whoa!
And it was a chunk. And they said, "Oh yeah, this is our yard." And I looked at it and I go, "Wow, this is here." It got hit. It was Haines City, and they said, "How bad was it here?" And I go, "Yeah," I said, "it didn't happen here. You know, it's one around and nothing here. It's just."
That's
never know.
Typical Florida. You know, hailstones that large will knock out your windshield and your back window if it's at a slant, and put dents in your car and all sorts of stuff. I mean, it's unbelievable how.
It'll definitely have some damage. They even said it broke out a bunch of windows in a couple of houses there. I guess it was flying sideways. And, they said one house looked like someone just took a machine gun, I guess, one of those real rapid fire things, and just shot the front of the other house with pellets. Wow.
Oh my gosh. Oh, geez.
All of a sudden. So when I saw that, I thought, it's a small storm heading this way, but,
it could be Ron full of hailstones.
It could be. Yeah.
I was at the golf course, and somebody's telling me about, hailstones that were hitting around lately too. Maybe that was what they were talking about. Maybe they saw something from Haines City too, because they were saying that it was big old hailstones that were coming down and damaged the cars and all that. So
in Melbourne, that was rough in Melbourne, Florida. A couple of how many weeks ago that was, but it was terrible. Strange stuff going on.
Strange weather. It's hard.
It is. Look at one monitor. It's 8:03, and we'll go ahead and close out the show. Thank you to everybody for next week.
Mother's Day Sunday. So our sincerest wishes out to all moms and grandmas and stepmoms and every mother out there.
Wish you a
great, great Mother's Day, and every day mom should be celebrated. We were talking last week about how they should have more than just one day to celebrate some of the stuff. Mothers should be celebrated every day. Tell your mom you appreciate her and love her every day.
It's not all about that. I was just getting ready to. I thought you were going to next week's guest and.
It just dawned on me Mother's Day is happening. So,
treat her special every day.
That's right.
We will talk next week, next Thursday, 7 p.m. live Eastern Time. At 7 p.m. Eastern Time, we're live on Blog Talk Radio and every place else just about. So thank you all for tuning in this Thursday, which is May the 11th. And have a great weekend and a great week ahead. And be safe.
Yep. We'll talk. Thank you for listening. See you next week.
Mm-hmm. This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Norm. For show information, links to All About Wine on Twitter and Facebook, or to be a guest on this show, visit the show website at www.allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available for download on iTunes or on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. Drink responsibly, and we'll see you next time on All About Wine.
All About Wine.
That.
I'm going to the green.